We just want to say welcome everyone for coming for the weekend. And it just, when you come to Penn Valley, there's something about coming to Penn Valley that we just want to come back. Just the support you get from people, and it just feels like a big family. I want to also encourage the ones that are here for the first time that I'm pretty sure you'll be coming back again. It was, my wife had to persuade me. I think we were here 7 or 8 years ago for the first time, and there was this place called Penn Valley, and I just didn't think that was something for me. That just seemed like, why do we need that? And, well, we ended up getting here the first time, and I wasn't even through the first evening, and I already knew that we're going to be coming back. We want to also thank our children for coming today, show their support. And I guess I didn't introduce my wife, Audrey. I'll let her take over here for a minute.
Well, like he said, this is the first time we have ever publicly told our story together, so bear with us. Our prayer is that our journey can be an encouragement to someone, and we give God all the praise and glory where it belongs, if it is an encouragement. It's only through his grace that we are what we are. And I recently came across a saying that I thought I'd like to share with all of you. It said, God doesn't provide the grace for the way stretched out before, but he giveth grace for one more step, then again for one more step. Keep on keeping on.
So our wedding day was August 5th of 2000, a beautiful sunny day, blue sky, fluffy clouds. And we joined hearts and hands for life, promising to love each other no matter what. We were young and carefree and in love. It's good we don't know what the future holds. It's comforting to know God does, and he is right there to help us through. All we need to do is ask. For the first year of our life, married life, I worked for a mason. We lived in a small house near Audrey's parents. And then opportunity came to buy Audrey's uncle's place near there. It was a hog operation, and we moved there and started remodeling the barns to put a sow farrow to wean operation in. And in February 2002, we were in business. And then on April 3rd, 2002, we welcomed our firstborn, Deanna Renee, into our family. We did the hogs for 11 years, and things got a little bit. We were on contract with the hogs, and then there were some changes being made, and we decided to change out our operation to a dairy. I had grown up on a dairy as a boy. By then, our family had grown to include more children, Krista, Casey, and Dervin. And baby number 5 was on the way for the spring of 2012. That was the same year that we were transitioning from the pigs to the cows.
It was definitely a stressful summer that summer. We actually took most of our barns down and built new, so we had a very busy summer. During the beginning of 2012, before we had for sure decided to do the dairy, we were praying about what God wants us to do. And one evening, we were sitting there talking, and Richard said this to me. He said, Audrey, I feel like something's going to happen. Like I'm weighed down with heaviness, it seems God is trying to ask me, are you prepared for what is going to happen? Sure gave me goosebumps. I didn't know what he meant.
I remember thinking, is it something like a close death in the family or a serious injury or a sickness? It was a sobering and scary thought. Of course, we were being stressed about our big farming decision, and I felt it was something more than that. Was God trying to prepare us for what was about to happen? The doors opened and we made the decision to tear down the pig barns and build a 120 cow freestall and milking parlor where they stood.
Then came April 7th, 2012, the day our journey began, our special journey began. We welcomed a 9-pound, 5-ounce baby girl named Sharon Marie into the family. I noticed right away her head was different shaped than our other babies. I actually thought she was a little baby because her head was so small, but she actually was our biggest baby. And while the midwife was examining and weighing and measuring her, I tentatively asked the midwife if she's normal. I can still remember her saying, well, she doesn't have the symptoms of Down syndrome, but she does have really big hands and feet, and her head is measuring kind of small. Her head was 12 and a half inches, and that can be normal for a much smaller baby, but for a 9-pound baby, it was definitely small. It was sort of coned, peaked, and her forehead was definitely small too. She told us, a small head is called microcephaly, but try not to worry. Now, how can you not worry when you've just been told there's something wrong with your baby? The big hands and feet didn't worry us, for most of our other children also had them. We actually had never heard of microcephaly, and we couldn't even pronounce the name. I had to say it to myself quite a few times before I could actually say it.
The midwife told us to take her to a pediatrician and get his opinion. So at day 3, we had an appointment. The doctor took x-rays to make sure the suture lines in her skull hadn't fused together. Of course, everything looked good, except she had a small, soft spot. He couldn't find anything other than her small head, which he also said is called microcephaly. He told us there are a lot of very normal people with a small head, unless it would be like a syndrome of some kind. He told us to take her home and wait and see how she develops. We found wait and see to be very stressful. We left totally overwhelmed, trying to grasp the thoughts and accept it that our lives were going to be forever changed. I remember thinking as I was going through the acceptance phase, special needs? No. That's just other people that can do that. We don't have a clue how to go down that path. And we definitely don't have that in our plans.
At around 3 weeks old, Jerry and Lorraine Horning, Jerry would be Richard's cousin and their son is here this weekend, gave Richard's parents some papers describing a syndrome called Mennonite microcephaly chorioretinopathy. And we abbreviate it to MMC, it's a lot easier to say, which involves small brains and eye problems. The children born with this genetic syndrome are missing a protein gene which helps the cells in the brain divide. Since the cells don't divide correctly, it causes a small brain. Because your eyes are actually part of your brain, it also affects the eye development, and some of these children are born blind. All of our children have sight. They have one eye is definitely worse than the other eye, and some of them don't have center vision. That's when the pieces to our puzzle began to come together. We called the clinic for special children and sent blood work down there and anxiously awaited the results. A week went by, and my mother started saying, "Don't you think you should call and see what those results are?" Well, of course I wanted to know, but half of me didn't want to know. She did act very very normal, baby-like, but her eyes definitely were doing some really funny things, and I'll describe that later. After a week, I did call them, And I remember how hard my heart was pounding. I dreaded the answer, but at the same time was ready to know what we were dealing with and could expect. The lady told me Sharon's test was positive. Half of me was so relieved to have a diagnosis, and the other half cried for my sweet baby who would never be normal. We did go through a grieving process. We had to let go of dreams. We had made for this baby before she was born, but life didn't stop, and we still had to go on. We found you can make new dreams. With acceptance comes peace, and the acceptance needs to be done over and over again. That doesn't mean that we always have acceptance right away. Sometimes it takes a while. 12 years later, we are still in this phase. But it wasn't long before Sharon found a warm spot in everyone's heart, and we loved her just as she was. Around this time, I think she was around 3 weeks old at the time, and we hadn't really said anything to our other children yet because we didn't know. The doctor said maybe she is normal, maybe she isn't. And we weren't sure what to tell them because we weren't sure ourselves. So when we had the diagnosis, we sat them all down. Deanna was holding Sharon at the time, and I remember her squeezing her tight and saying, "We kind of knew something was wrong, but we still love her anyway." They accepted her just like that. I wish it could have been that easy for us as parents, but we felt pretty overwhelmed with the responsibility.
A few days after the test results came back, we received a call from Dr. Strauss himself. He urged us to make an appointment with Dr. Columbers, children's eye specialist at the Campus Eye Center in Lancaster, PA, to make sure she can see and to make sure her retinas weren't detaching from her brain. We had noticed her eyes were doing some strange things like crossing in toward her nose a lot and jiggling back and forth quite a bit. Now, a newborn's eyes don't always work together, but this was extreme. Around 5 weeks of age, we took Sharon for her first eye doctor visit. We also stopped at the clinic for special children for a visit with Dr. Strauss. It was such a relief to see a doctor who knows what MMC syndrome was, and he could answer our many questions. We felt we were in good hands and still do. Dr. Columbers gave us the good news that Sharon has sight in both eyes. He said she is very farsighted. Her vision is poor enough that she is going to need glasses at a very young age. We took her for an appointment 3 months later and gave her a prescription for a pair of glasses. Do you want to show them now?
I actually brought their first pair of glasses. I could not find Cardell's. I know they're somewhere, but I don't know where. Now, Sharon had a really round face, and there are picture books back there if you want to look at them. So her glasses are actually a little bigger than Alyssa's, even though she got them first. But at 4 months old, she had this little pair. And Alyssa had this pair, and there was only one size smaller, so she almost didn't have a small enough pair. You wouldn't believe how many people stopped me in the grocery store and asked how I knew my little tiny baby needed glasses. You don't see that very often.
So when, at 4 months of age, when she got her first pair of glasses, we put them on the first time, and her eyes lit up, and she grinned and grinned. We could see that it made a huge difference in her range of vision, and that she could see us from a lot farther away. At first, she kept them on very well. It was only around 8 to 9 months when she discovered they can come off and are lots of fun to play with. On October 8th, 2012, when Sharon was 6 months old, she had laser eye surgery done at campus to laser her retinas fast to her brain to greatly reduce the risk of going blind. After surgery was over, Dr. Columbers came to talk to us. He told us that Sharon has some very unique eyes. He found 300 indents or scar marks in the retinas of each eye. He had never seen so many per eye, and he was amazed they hadn't started to detach. He put 2,000 tiny laser marks in each eye. Her left eye has no center vision, he said, with so many scar marks. He wouldn't be surprised if she has some blank spots in her vision. To this day, she doesn't let her poor vision stop or hinder her. We can see she doesn't see everything, but she is quick to adapt.
Sharon was only a few months old when we noticed she seemed extra active. She often was moving her head, arms, or legs. We discovered later that this is a common thing with MMC children. They told us as adults, the other people that have MMC children told us they will calm down as they grow older. And I had a very hard time believing that until Sharon turned 12, or maybe it was 11 and a half, and I'm actually starting to see her calm down. She held herself kind of rigid and loved to use her feet. At 11 months, she started crawling and was soon cruising all over the house. By 14 months, she was walking. She was quite clumsy and did a lot of tripping and falling. We figured some of that was from her limited sight, some from trying to go too fast, and some from her lack of brain development in that area. It was amazing to watch her walk. I think what she forgot to do was she forgot to look down and then up to make sure there's nothing in her path. And she would come toward us, and if there was a kitchen chair sitting there, she would trip right over that chair. Now, how can you not see a kitchen chair sitting there? But she didn't, and she would just sprawl right over it. And there was a lot of things that she did that to. Her balance has improved as she grew, and we're quite amazed how agile and steady she is now. At the end of June 2013, so she would have been one, we were invited to the first MMC gathering that was held in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania. Even though most of the people there were almost strangers to us, we were so excited. We had met a few MMC children, but we had never seen an adult with this syndrome and were curious what they were like. We were only a year into our journey, and sometimes we felt kind of alone and very overwhelmed because this syndrome, there are not a lot of children born with this syndrome. And as we were sitting on the chairs watching people arrive, my eyes were drawn to those couples who had adult MMCs with them. And I was relieved to see them smiling and laughing as they visited. Maybe life with a special needs child wouldn't be so bad after all. They had weathered many a storm and could relax and find the joy in this special journey. Those strangers became dear friends that day, and we are so thankful for the encouragement and advice they give us.
Speech also was a real struggle for Sharon in those years. She was almost two before we started to recognize any of her words. At one point around the age of three, her lack of words or our lack of understanding what she wanted caused her to become really frustrated and emotional. Now at age 12, her language skills are amazing. Sometimes the details of her stories can be a little jumbled, but eventually you can make sense out of them. One of her therapists told us, "You work so hard to teach a child to speak, and then after a while you tell them they have to be quiet."
That's what happened.
And that's what happened.
Around the age of two years and 3 months, we started to notice a change for the worse in Sharon's emotional behavior. She could be laughing about something 1 minute and crying about the same thing the next. It was beyond me how she could do that, but she did. When something didn't go the way she thought it should, she got very emotional about it and would throw herself on the floor in a temper tantrum. We tried all kinds of things to get her to stop and calm down, but nothing worked until she decided she was all done. It seems she just had to get the frustration out, and anything we did, she just wasn't there. Nothing worked. Then she would pick herself off the floor, a changed girl, and go on like nothing ever happened. This was very stressful. Over this time, she was also having a struggle to calm herself down at night so she could sleep. She was sleeping with Deanna at the time. And sometimes I would hear her over there at 10 or 11 o'clock. I would wake up and I would hear this thump, thump, thump. So I would go investigate, and there was Sharon. The room was dark, and she was standing on the headboard of the bed, just flopping down onto the bed. And Deanna was beside her, sound asleep. She had no clue she was doing it. So I would get her and try to calm her down, and her little heart would just be pounding. And I'm like, how can you sleep if your heart is racing like this? So we took her to the clinic for help. The first thing he suggested was to watch her diet. Well, to me, I was pretty sure it was more than just a diet change needed. But we were there for quite a while, and she was done. She got tired of it. And he came into the room to find Sharon on the floor, kicking the cupboards that were in there. He turned right around, and he said, I will get you something. And so we started her on risperidone. We saw a huge change. She fell asleep and slept a lot longer, a lot better, which made her behaviors a lot sweeter during the day. The change came at a great time because her life was going to change again with the arrival of a baby brother in a few weeks. I will admit that it was a real struggle to me to put her on medicine. I felt like a bad mother. I couldn't control her. But after I saw how calm and how happy it made her, I wondered why we didn't do it sooner. Fast forward a few years to the summer she was six. Her risperidone was not strong enough anymore, and her mood swings were getting out of control. I remember making the remark to Richard, it's either she goes on something or the rest of us are going to have to go on something. So we called the clinic, and he said, unfortunately, with things like this, you just have to, it's trial and error. Everybody's body responds different to different things. So we started her on something for anxiety. He thought maybe she's having anxiety attacks. And they told us she has to be on that for 6 weeks before we'll see the true results. Well, at about 3 weeks, I said to Richard, am I getting crazier or is she getting crazier? He said, she is. At 5 weeks, my mother started saying, what are you feeding her? Like, what kind of medicine is this? Her development was actually going backwards. It was just not working the right way. And I had called the clinic at 3 weeks, and they said, well, hang in there till 6 weeks. At 6 weeks, Dr. Strauss, we had a phone conversation. He said, how's it going? I said, are you ready for an earful? He said, that is my job. Yes, how is it going? And I told him, I said, I am ready to take the rest of that bottle myself because it's not working for her. And so then he put her on something else, which just made her cry. The second pill we gave her, she cried for 8 hours, whined and cried. And then we did long-acting Ritalin, and that was the key. She is still on it today. She was so hyper that summer that while we were cleaning up one huge mess she created, she was over somewhere else making another one.
So there was always a guessing game with what could happen next. And sometimes you didn't know what to do, but it seemed like you had these set of rounds in your house when you started, and one by one you watched everything get broke. They would knock the stuff off the wall, and it was challenging to see all your possessions just kind of get broke up over the years. One day when we were having supper, one evening, Sharon was about 2.5 years old. She was sitting in her high chair, and she threw a little fit, and I don't know why she had a fork, but somehow the fork went flying at a high rate of speed and it stuck in the drywall behind us. We were just glad it didn't hit anybody in the head.
We took a picture just so we know that it happened.
One evening, Sharon gave us a scare. We had childproof covers on our doorknobs so that they can't get out. On this particular evening, she was happily playing on, or so we thought. Suddenly, someone mentioned her, how quiet it was. Somehow, she had gotten the door facing the road open, and that could have probably been from somebody coming in and not getting it latched right. So we start searching with pounding hearts to figure out where she is. We discovered her down the road a little ways on her tricycle. She was parked right in the middle of the road. A car had just stopped to investigate. We were thankful that God had spared her life, and we snatched her off the road and brought her back to the house.
Around the age of 3 or 4, Sharon discovered during the summer, if she was hot, all she had to do was take her dress off over her head. When you have a small head, you don't even have to open the zipper. It just comes right off. She would do it anywhere she took a notion. Sort of embarrassing at times. She had no concept of what was modest or appropriate. Sometimes she'd put her older sibling's clothing on. Sometimes she'd squeeze into a younger sibling's too little clothes. She even managed to squeeze into doll clothes. We could hardly get them off again. I almost took the scissor to them. She was panicking a little bit. Many times she would layer her clothing, and it was nothing to peel 5 to 7 layers off of her. At 12, she is no longer layering clothing, but she now changes frequently during the day. It's not unusual for her to change 3 to 4 times during the day for whatever reason she finds best.
When Sharon was 8, this is one of these miracle and guardian angel stories. I had went to the stone quarry with I have a little 6-wheel dump truck, and went for a load of stone. And when I came back through, I had Cardell with me. I seen Sharon down at the house playing, and I pulled up by the barn there, and I just backed in a short little area there where I was gonna dump the stone off, and I have one of those side swinging tailgates on that truck where I just have to get out and open the 2 like big wing nuts to hold this thing shut. And there was some pressure on it, so I couldn't open the door. So I figure I'll just raise the dump up a little bit and the stone will push it open. And then I'll go back and swing it around and dump it the rest of the way. And I dumped it part ways, and normally that thing just pops open pretty quick. And went some more, and it didn't seem right that this thing isn't opening. It was at the point where I was afraid if it does open, it's going to hit the ground and bent the tailgate. So I lowered it down again and went out, and here Sharon was, standing right where the stone was going to, where the lid was going to fly open. She was down at the house just a minute ago, and how she got there so quick, it really went through me. So got her taken down, and then I just lifted the tailgate or the dump a little bit more, and it opened right up. It was definitely a miracle right there.
Summer of 2017, we had a pet kitten that was very tame. Sharon loves animals. She carried that kitten all over the place. We decided the kitten's special too. She would do all kinds of things to it, and it just kept coming back for more attention. If she wanted to catch it while it was walking away, she would grab it by its tail and use it to drag the kitten back to her. We just couldn't make her understand to be kind. One afternoon, I heard that kitten meowing in pain. And I looked out the window, and there was Sharon sitting on the porch. And as I stood there and watched, I saw Sharon bite the kitten's ear. And after it meowed very shrilly, I heard Sharon say, "Did I hurt you? I'm so sorry." She said it very sweetly. Then she very gently rubbed its head until it relaxed, and then she did it all over again. The cat was definitely special. It stayed there.
When Sharon was, mealtimes were kind of chaotic sometimes, or most times. During one dinner prayer, Sharon, who was about 3, picked up her little plastic bowl and gave it a fling. Imagine Mom Audrey's surprise when the bowl hit her on the head. Another time, Cardell dumped his water. Now, what are you supposed to do when you hear a water, you're down for prayer and you hear water get dumped? They're supposed to have their hands under the table, but you just, do you end a prayer quick or do you hope it's not coming your way? Alyssa, our youngest one there, she's ready to eat, so she doesn't want prayer to last long. So sometimes when you go down for prayer, she'll be saying, "Amen, amen," before you barely get started. When Sharon was between 5 and 7, she would sneak down after, at this point she was sleeping with Casey, and she would sleep down after Casey fell asleep and find whatever she could find to eat. One morning, Casey woke up to find a half a loaf of bread crumbled up in her bed. This is mine. Mm-hmm. On October 21st, 2014, God sent us a precious gift, 8-pound, 4-ounce baby boy. We named Cardell Richard. He was named after both his grandparents, Carl and Delmar, and his daddy, Richard. We saw right away that he had MMC also. Right from the start, he was a content baby and very easy to care for. It didn't take us long to notice he was a lot calmer natured than Sharon, and things came easier for him mentally. The process of acceptance was overwhelming and painful as we tried to comprehend life with 2 special needs children. We didn't have the total shock to face like we did with Sharon because we knew what we were dealing with. God is only a prayer away and is willing to carry us through our trying times if we let him. About 6 weeks before Cardell's birth. Oh, that's yours.
Go ahead. Do you want to read it? About 6 weeks before Cardell's birth, I had an ultrasound done at the midwife's office. We had decided we didn't want to know. You can tell by ultrasound. She thought she would like to see for herself. And she told me that the head is not over big. I went home and looked at Sharon's head. She was sitting on the bench at the table. I still remember it. I put my hands around her head and I knew just by the shape that we were in for number 2. That evening while I was trying to sleep, I think I had what you would call a panic attack. I never had one before. I couldn't breathe. I felt so overwhelmed and alone, and I wondered how I'm ever going to be able to care for 2 children. And if you remember around this time, Sharon was throwing temper tantrums and we were all walking on eggshells around her. The next morning before I went to the barn, I asked the Lord for strength for the day and peace to be able to accept his will. I remember telling him, "I can't go on like this anymore. I need help." I opened my Bible. The first verse I saw became one of my favorites. "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." John 14:1. It seemed like the Lord was telling me to just relax and trust in him.
At 3 weeks old, Cardell had his first eye doctor visit. Dr. Clumbers told us that his eyes and vision looked pretty good. Then at 9.5 months, he had his laser surgery, again, just like Sharon had. He found about 20 to 30 scars per eye to laser. Around 10 months, he prescribed Cardell's first pair of glasses. His left eye was farsighted. The right eye had no prescription. Cardell does very well with keeping his glasses on, but he did have some accidents with them, like the one Sunday morning we couldn't find his glasses. We finally left without them, and after I backed the van out of the garage, I thought I'd seen glasses on the floor. After church, we looked, and sure enough, they were laying right where the tire went, smashed flat.
Cardell said his first word, hey, around 11 months. He seemed to understand quite a bit, and speech wasn't a huge struggle. It didn't take us long to see that mentally, out of the three of them, he definitely has the most smarts mentally. He does struggle to accept change, and it seems to take his brain a little while sometimes to process and be okay with big changes. This past winter, we decided to paint our lavender bathroom a rose color. He was so upset and worked up because he was sure we were going to paint the toilet seat too, and then he couldn't use it. After he saw it was all painted, he was okay with it, but his brain was definitely in overdrive. At 13 months, Cardell started walking. He went everywhere. He was a busy little boy. We noticed his one foot turned in slightly, and the muscles in his hips and legs were kind of stiff. And around 3 or 4, we started patterning exercises, and that took care of the problem. Actually, all three of our children have gone through the patterning program. Alyssa is still working on it. It is a program that you need to have enough of help to go through because it is sort of intense. And I give the teacher the credit for all the time they put into doing it at school. In around 18 months, he was in the hospital for 3 days because he had hemolytic uremic syndrome. He had been sick that week for 2 days of diarrhea and 2 days of stomach flu and couldn't keep anything down, not even water. He looked really pale and kind of orange colored, and he had small black and blue marks about the size of a pencil eraser scattered over his body. I took him to the doctor. I had discovered that in the evening, and so the next morning I took him to the doctor, who did blood work and discovered he was very dehydrated, anemic, and had a low platelet count and a high infection count. She sent us directly to the hospital. Hemolytic uremic syndrome is when your body is fighting off a virus and it turns on itself and absorbs its own blood or gets rid of it. It also affects the kidneys, and some people have to go on dialysis for a while to give the kidneys time to heal. In the hospital, they gave him IV fluids and blood, and once he got the blood, it was amazing how fast the color returned to his cheeks and how quickly he sat up and started looking around. I think we were in there, I'm not sure, 3 or 4 days, which was very, usually people are in there longer for that, so we felt blessed that he was healed that quick.
One Sunday morning, when I stepped into church, I realized Cardell still had a piece of gum in his mouth, and bright green mint gum. And I was thinking that he'll probably swallow it, and because at that point I didn't know what to take him back out. So, well, after the church, after the benediction, I stood up and I felt something, and here, somehow, that piece of gum was on the seat of my pants.
Tell him where you sit.
And I sit at the singing table up front. So I sit on the ladies' side of the table, and I want it to disappear, but I didn't know how to disappear. So I quick, frantically tried to get this gum peeled off my pants quick, and yeah. And it seemed like it cleared right out, but...
Tell them about your sister-in-law sitting.
My sister-in-law was sitting back a couple benches, and she gave me grief for that. We have about 2 miles to church. One Sunday morning, we were on the way to church, and Sharon and Cardell were arguing back and forth which one is normal and which one isn't. It sure made us laugh. Why did the argument start? We don't really know.
This happened actually in April. One evening I was making supper, and Sharon was 7, Cardell was 5, and they were playing quietly and nicely. I was so happy to see that, because often there's a lot of arguing back and forth. And so I wasn't really paying attention until Cardell came to me and said, he said, black marks up my arm. That made me look. He had a permanent black magic marker, and sure enough, there were big, long black marks up his arm. So I went running over to see what they were doing, and I stopped and stared with shock, not wanting to believe what I was seeing. A huge patch of the carpet had a lot of ugly black scribble marks on it, and a few of the surrounding toys did too. I knew exactly who did it, for underneath the whole mess, Sharon had proudly wrote her name with the same permanent marker. After trying 2 kinds of stain remover and lots of scrubbing, with very little success, I was about to despair. I admit there were tears of frustrations joining the stain remover on the floor. Cardell, our sensitive little boy who gets worried when anyone is upset or there's any tension in the room, came over to watch what I was doing. Suddenly he asked, "Mom, why are you crying?" When I told him I was frustrated, tired, and not happy that I had to scrub all these marks off the carpet, the dear boy immediately dropped on his knees and started furiously scrubbing. His kindness touched my heart, and I felt some of the frustration melt away. We were able to totally get rid of the marks after we used some very strong, stinky-smelling paint remover on them.
Cardell is a farm boy at heart. The barn, the shop, tractors, equipment, anything with wheels on it is his delight. His dad and brother Durbin are his heroes. He wants to be just like them. He knows John Deere is the best. Sometimes I'm amazed that some of the details he knows about our different equipment that he absorbs by listening or seeing. We should have put a mile counter on his bike and barn tricycle. He spends a lot of time going up and down our driveway. It's his delight to find a big mud puddle and spin around in it. If you meet Cardell today, he's probably instantly ready to be your friend. He can't wait to tell whoever will listen all about any new thing or exciting event that happened. He has a great sense of humor.
In April, I bought a set of salt and pepper shakers. As I was peeling the price tag off, Sharon and Cardell had their heads as close as they could, watching me, could barely move. One was on one side, one was in the other. When Cardell asked what I was doing, I explained that these little stickers tell me how much to pay for them. He said, "Why don't you just take them?" I told him I couldn't do that because that's stealing. He promptly said, "Let him that stole steal no more." Part of Ephesians 4:28 that they had studied for Bible memory really amazed me. Obviously, he is listening. In April, at a doctor visit at the clinic, Dr. Poskett diagnosed Cardell with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and started him on something for it. The reason we decided to try something is because he was starting to get really radical with people. They would be up in the shop trying to fix a piece of equipment, so you have to take it apart to fix it, and he would just lose it because they're breaking the stuff. And one day a fellow came to fix the milk compressors, and Richard stepped in the milk house, and there was Cardell just chewing him out up and down for breaking stuff. And yeah, thankfully he knew him. So, and utensils at the dinner table, he has to switch the cup, the plate, the spoon, everything. It doesn't matter what it is, it's not always the same one, but everything has to be switched and put just right. He's very particular. So we started him on this medicine, and it's definitely making a change for the better. In May of this year, we had quite the experience. Cardell came home from school on May 7th and told me, "Mom, when I come home from school tomorrow, don't look at me." I thought it was a little strange, but I didn't know why he said that. He said it again the next morning. I thought they were making Mother's Day gifts at school, and they kept telling me about these gifts they're making. I told them they have to be quiet. They cannot keep secrets, so I thought it would be a good time to learn how to keep a secret. So I thought, well, maybe he's going to hide this Mother's Day gift, and I was sort of amazed that he was that smart to know to hide it. Well, he came home from school and said again, "Mom, don't look at me." He went upstairs and changed, which was a little unusual. I usually have to almost punish him to make him change his clothing. And they were hauling manure, the neighbors were, and he likes to ride in the tractors, so I thought, well, maybe he wants to go out with them, but he's usually supposed to tell one of us so he doesn't get run over. I would rather have him driving in the tractor than standing there getting run over. Well, he disappeared, and I didn't realize it right away, and when I did, I sent Richard a text. He had been on the road doing some errands, and I said, "I don't know where Cardell is. Can you find him?" And I left for the post office because he had bent his glasses pretty bad, and we get them at campus, so I wanted to send them down to campus to get them fixed. And I noticed Richard's truck was beside the road, and a tractor, I could just see the top of the tractor in the field, and I thought, well, maybe the manure spreaders went in there, and they didn't realize it was a field that we don't farm anymore because there's too many trees around it. So on the way back, I called Richard, and I said, "Did you find Cardell?" He said, "Yes." Did you ever hear a grown man cry? I'll let him explain what he found.
So I was leaving to drop off some supplies to another neighbor, and here comes Cardell walking up the road. And this was before I seen the text message. And I'm like, what are you doing here? I stopped, and he said he was looking for Dervin, his brother, and I said, "Well, how did you get over here?" And he said, "The tractor." "The tractor?" "Yeah," he said, "the wheel fell off." He never in his life drove a tractor before, and I think that's what he was trying to tell Audrey about, not looking at him. He had some other things up his sleeve, and so he was an emotional wreck walking up the road, and he didn't look hurt, but I told him to get in the truck, and then I walked down to, well, I said, "Where is it?" And he said it went down in the woods there. And so I walked down there. I wasn't sure what I was going to find, and he went down the road about 1,100 feet and ran off the right-hand side of the road. I don't know how fast he was going, and ran through the ditch and swerved right across the road again and down the left side of the road, down over like an 8 or 10 foot bank, and there's a woods, and then there's an old abandoned field beyond that, and he hit a couple fairly good sized trees. He said he got thrown off the seat. Luckily he didn't fly out. Luckily no branches came through the cab. But he ripped the whole front wheel off the one side, and steps and mirrors, and really shook up, and shook his dad up too pretty bad. Cardell was a detailed person, so when he rides along with the custom manure haulers, and he watches, and he rides with us too, but he watches switches and buttons, and I think when he lost his focus is when he got this tractor going and he didn't know how to stop it. And he took his eye off the road. We were just glad that he was spared and that nobody was coming on the road at the time. Another recent happening, I was in the shop. Cordell was there and the fuel delivery man came and I told him just to stay down with me because he likes to go make friends with anybody. He don't have the stranger awareness thing. And I told him he might be a mean man. You have to really make it dramatic. That delivery guy might be mean. Just stay here. Well, I was doing my thing in the shop and I look up and, he went up there. He's up there. And he looked like he was coming down. And here he is coming down, and he had a 20-foot dog chain, leash or whatever, with him. Where'd you get that? And he comes down, and I said, you weren't supposed to go up there. And he goes, I told him I'm going to chain him up.
You should see the fellow. He's a big fellow.
There's this big guy with not many words. And he told him that he's going to chain him up. I said, you what? I said, what did he say? He just looked at me.
He came in the house and told me the story, too. And I was horrified. It is kind of loud when they're filling the fuel tank, so I was hoping that the man either didn't understand him or that he had a very great sense of humor. I said, why did you say such a mean thing to him? And he said, because my brain told me to. I told him, next time his brain tells him to say mean things, he's not supposed to listen to it. When are we supposed to stop? Okay, we'll quick do Alyssa's story. In the fall of 2016, 3 months before Alyssa was born, we had an ultrasound done, and it confirmed that once again, God was calling us to walk the MMC journey. Our hopes for a normal baby lay shattered before us, and it felt like someone dumped a whole truckload of bricks down over our heads. 3 special children in less than 5 years, it was staggering. I remember crying, why 3, Lord? Do you know what you are doing? I honestly felt so weary and worn from the stress and care that goes with special needs that I didn't feel one bit willing to deal with the emotions and grief one more time. I was actually shocked at my emotions. I experienced anger at God. I was mad at him. He didn't answer yes to our prayer for a normal, healthy baby. Mad that I was being forced to once again let go of all those dreams. Thankfully, the anger didn't last long before I repented. How could I stay angry at my baby's maker when he was the only one who could give us the strength to see us through? I was very grateful for Richard's calmness when I was emotionally falling apart. She was born February 23rd, weighing 7 pounds, 13 ounces, and she gave us a big scare at birth. She did not breathe right away. The midwife was just about ready to stick her on oxygen when she started breathing. I think the Lord knew we needed that scare so he could realize how much we already loved her and how precious she was, even as we battled to accept that she wasn't normal. Psalms 139:14 became a special verse to me. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. God makes no mistakes. The first couple nights of her young life, Alyssa slept very little. She was so fussy, even from birth. She was fussy until round 3 when she suddenly decided there's more to life than crying and mom. We never figured out what changed her, but it felt like a miracle. We battled with poor sleeping to around 10 or 11 months. It seemed her brain couldn't relax enough to stay sleeping. So she would sleep a little, wake a little, sleep a little, wake a little. She didn't take naps during the day very much. And I was beginning to wonder how such a little child could go on with such little sleep. I know my body was rebelling. Finally, one day, 3-year-old Cardell was playing peekaboo with her while she was sitting in her high chair, and she giggled. Suddenly, it hit me that she hasn't giggled for weeks, and her low sleep and lots of crying schedule was wearing her out. The clinic came to our rescue with a sleeping pill called Trazodone. Amazing. Most nights she slept all night, was a lot happier during the day, and even took nice naps. Then I had to train myself how to sleep. She struggled with eating. She would hold herself kind of stiff, and soon after she finished, she would cry a frustrated, pain-filled cry. Around 4 months, we put her on acid reflux medicine, and the results were instant. Because her outer round vision is better than her center vision, we noticed her, she would sometimes tip her head to the side to see things better. Around 3, a vision therapist diagnosed her with cortical vision impairment. Basically, that means her eyes can see, but her brain isn't telling her what she is seeing. Some of the symptoms are the same for autism as cortical vision impairment. I did sometimes question if she had autism before the diagnosis, but her physical therapist told me she has some of those symptoms, but she is way too social to be autistic. Because of her cortical vision impairment, she is sometimes scared of new things. Once she gets used to them, she's okay, but it takes a lot of trying again and again. If you talk to her this weekend and she just stares at you with no expression or looks at you like you're not there, don't give up. She can hear you. It takes a while for her brain to process things, and new faces with all their expressions can be very difficult.
I guess we're going to have to skip over. A lot of Alyssa's journey was similar to the other children's. Here's another kind of a miracle one. The spring, she had learned how to open door knobs, which is a great thing to learn unless you are someone like her who has a fascination and no danger awareness of the road. One evening, I had just checked to see what she was doing. Well, Audrey had. And my wife went to the back room to do something at the desk. It was almost supper time, and they were just coming in from the barn. Dervin came racing into the house, shouting, "Mom, did you know the Alyssa's outside?" Here she had slipped outside. Anyhow, when Dervin saw her, she was standing on the edge of the road. Our dog named Sophie, a 1-year-old chocolate lab, had Alyssa's dress in her mouth and was pulling her off the road. Did the dog just know that? Or was there a guardian angel guiding the dog? We'll never know, but over the years I've seen many miracles and am a firm believer of guardian angels. About a month later, this same dog got hit on the road.
Our children love school, for which we are thankful for, and I give a lot of credit to our special ed teachers for making school a happy, fun place to be. I want to say thank you to all you special ed teachers. I just love special ed teachers. Thank you for your enthusiasm, dedication when caring for, teaching, and loving the special children God has placed in our homes. Thanks for being a second mom to them, for giving the ones at home a much-needed break. May God bless you and reward you for caring. One day, Sharon came to school and told teacher Lorraine, I know how to spell mom's name. She said, really? So she gave her a pencil, and Sharon enthusiastically wrote M-O-M, Mom. I will be honest, sometimes my brain and body get so weary from all the demands and needs of our MMC children. I get weary of changing big children's diapers. Sometimes I get so ready for 7-year-old Alyssa to grow up. She's very baby-like. I get weary of her loud crying. Sometimes life is overwhelming, and I'm not sure I can do this one more day. God sees, He cares, He gives strength moment by moment. His grace is sufficient. There are many times when I feel I just can't do this. Then someone stops in with a meal or something baked, a card or letter comes in the mail, someone calls and lends a listening ear, or someone cheers us with a bouquet of flowers. Most of the time when this happens, the giver has no clue I was struggling, but God did, and he sent help at the perfect time. Frequently, I need to pray to God to help me to be cheerful and willing and for strength to fulfill the calling he has given us. I need to remember his help and strength are just a prayer away. We are thankful for the prayers and support of family, friends, church family, and school teachers. We can't do this on our own, and their prayers and support mean so much. Our children are a blessing. Without them, we couldn't have met all you wonderful people. Our faith and trust in God has grown stronger, although he's still working on us.
And one more thing to add. Special children seem to play a big toll in your marriage. It creates a lot of stress, and we just had our ups and downs in that too, and it's good to make sure we take time for this ourselves too sometimes. And in closing, I'd like to read Numbers 6, 24, 26. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.